Okay.
Are we ready?
Yeah, I'm just going to use that. That's like our worst one ever, 107. The worst.
The worst one of all time.
But I've become tired of waiting, and now we're just going to do the show.
Alrighty.
Because it's midnight 20 in Sarnia, or wherever you are, Don. Guelph? Yeah. Guelph?
Oh, it's all the same time zone.
Yeah. Welcome to episode 107 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. Right. With me, as always, is
Adam in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
And also Adam, who what? What's going on?
I'm not saying it. He's got to introduce himself.
Don.
Oh, okay, sure. Then you got another guy on the panel here today, Don from Barrie, Ontario.
That's just good hosting, Adam. Normally you introduce the guest.
No. This is how I do it.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So when somebody comes over to your house, you just wait for them to open the door?
No, I ask them to get me a drink.
Ah, there you go.
And the keys under the mat, and then just go ahead.
Yeah, while you're up, can you make me a sandwich?
Wow. Not coming to your house.
Nah, don't come.
Not invited.
Not invited.
So there you go. What's going on? What's going on in Barrie, Don?
Well, not too much right now. It's rainy outside, which is odd in the middle of January, but we're supposed to get some nice snowy weather coming up tomorrow, and that's going to keep me busy. In the wintertime, of course, I do a lot of snowflake photography, so I've been filling up my days, usually about 4 hours or more every day, editing and playing around with snowflake photography.
Well, that leads me to my next question, Don. Who are you?
Unusual, strange. I'm not a normal photographer.
Okay, well, what I meant to say is for people.
What are you?
Yeah. For people who don't know Don, and if you haven't heard him on the show before, which seems odd because we had requests to get you on the show.
I was surprised when you mentioned that. That's shocking.
That people listen to our show?
That too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot, Don. People requested you by name.
Oh, wow.
Don K, I'm assuming.
Yeah. If they spelled out my last name, then it's probably my family members.
Yeah. Yeah, she signed it, Don's mom.
Yeah. She's a big fan.
Good for her. So for those who don't know, let's find out who you are.
I am a photographer and photography teacher based in Barrie, Ontario. I do a lot of macro work. You might be familiar, like I mentioned, with my snowflakes and water droplets and that kind of stuff. But I do a lot of fun landscape photography, and I teach here in Barrie at Georgian College, and I do a number of courses there. I write for Outdoor Photography Canada. I've got a column in every issue, and actually right now one of my photos is on the cover, and I'm pretty thrilled about that. Let's see. Oh, I'm sort of all over the place. I'm a co-host on This Week in Photo and a couple of other podcasts out there as well, but I'm always happy. Actually, this podcast, The Two Hosers, is the first one that I've ever been on, I believe. So, thanks, guys.
All right. Well, happy to have you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Before we get rolling on the show, I want to talk a very, very little bit, because I don't know all the details about there's a patent troll lawsuit going on. Do you know much about this, Don?
Fill me in.
I'm not sure the name of the company. The details don't matter because more details will come out. We're not involved. But what's going on is there's somebody is suing a couple different shows. How Stuff Works, I think, and the Adam Carolla Show are getting sued for some sort of obscure patent infringement that sounds spurious.
Okay. Now,
yeah, essentially what they're doing is it sounds like they're going after just the biggest number one guy to try to set a precedent and get some money out of the deal.
Well, what is this patent that they're claiming that they own?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is it's
how people talk to each other?
It's even more odd than that. All I know is Leo Laporte was on Adam's show the other day explaining a little bit about what was going on. And it's an obscure thing. It's something to do with distribution of regularly updated audio program or something odd like that.
I think the entire patent system in the United States needs to be thrown out and restarted. It's just getting crazy.
Okay, that's what I understand. But the end game of this is, I think somebody wants to get in the middle of podcasters and listeners. Now, short term, this doesn't really affect us because we obviously don't get quite the numbers as a How Stuff Works or Adam Carolla, but if they can somehow get in the middle and implement this, this will show up across the board. And what that means is shows like us will disappear. Shows like This Week in Photo will take a big hit.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
It is a little bit. So what's going to end up happening as I don't know, what Carolla is talking about doing is starting a Kickstarter legal fund for everybody to come in and basically just crush this guy, or this whoever's doing the taking the legal action is to come in and fight this rather than you know, everybody fight it on their own, because I think they've already taken on, from what I heard on you know, from Leo Laporte. I'm not on a first name basis with Leo, so I don't want.
Yeah, I was going to say that was awkward.
Yeah.
Just show me where to spend my money, and I'll support whatever initiatives. Because this seems like the kind of thing that it happens a lot in the tech industry, where somebody will get an obscure patent and then they'll sit on it for 20 years until somebody else is making billions of dollars with it, and then they'll go and knock on their door and ask for their fair share of whatever this is, and it's just very slimy. It comes across as like that slick used car salesman kind of guy, and it just, yeah, it sucks.
That's the impression that everyone's kind of getting on this one, and it's. I think they would ideally like a licensing fee, just like a regular fee to be paid. And if that happens, then it's going to go right down the line, and no one's going to have much of a defense against this if the first one falls. But if they get out there, out in front of this, and you know, knock it down right away, I think it would be good for everybody. So as we know more, we'll let everybody know. But hopefully, we'll make that happen.
I'll have to do some research.
Well, we will let people know as it goes, and because it's just kind of the very beginning of this, and I'll keep Adam informed. That's the main thing.
Yeah, can't wait.
You still there?
Yeah, no, I'm still here.
Great.
I was just waiting for you to talk about something that interested me.
Let's talk about one of your photos then, Adam. No joke.
Is that where we're at?
That's what we're going to talk about. You posted the picture of your wife last week.
Right. Oh, man. It was like a firestorm after that I posted that picture.
You posted your self-portrait of the MMA Adam.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you do the full head buttering and all that?
No. Just side buttering.
Okay, yeah, okay. So, but then you'd said to me, you know, you had taken a picture of your wife, and you ended up posting that. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that photo.
Sure, go ahead.
All right. Don, are you looking at that photo?
I've got it right here, yeah.
Okay.
It
says Lisa.
Yeah. I like your photo better, Adam.
You like the one of me better?
I do. Not so much the subject, of course.
No.
But there's nothing wrong with this photo, but for some reason, I like the one of you better. It just seemed a little more effortless, as we talked about last week.
Okay. Now, the lighting conditions are exactly the same.
I think it might have been your head angle.
Yeah, maybe.
But ultimately, I don't come at this with any, you know, without anything constructive. What I want, my point was on this was it was a little bit too contrasty for me, like a little bit too moody, this photo.
Oh, and that's
especially
what I wanted.
Around the eyes too, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Just to have the eyes jump out a little bit more than what I'm seeing. I do like some of the contrast that, you know, hitting the edges of her hands and that kind of stuff. That looks nice.
Mm-hmm.
But less so on the face.
That was what was just disconcerting for me, is that she's smiling and yet yeah, it's all moody in her eyes. And so,
yeah, I see what you're saying. I did want a moodier picture, mm-hmm, than the smile, but I only took, I think, three versions, and I think she was smiling at all. She didn't want the I'm looking like a badass hockey player kind of picture, but that's kind of what I wanted.
Uh-huh.
So, and that's, you know, I could, otherwise I probably would have, you know, went with a brighter background or something, but I was after the darker. And again, for me, this was more about the lighting than it was about, you know, doing anything spectacular other than putting a picture saying hockey was back on her Facebook page.
Gotcha.
That's all this was. So I wasn't trying to, you know, create a Rembrandt here or anything.
Okay, then mission accomplished.
Yeah, well, you're welcome. You know, do you ever just say you're welcome to people when they don't say anything, or congratulations to people when they haven't done anything?
Yes.
You should try it. It's awesome. People get really confused if you just walk up to somebody you haven't seen in a while and you say congratulations.
Right. You open with it.
Yeah, you just walk up and, you know, you shake their hand, congratulations, and then just, especially when they're around their girlfriend or wife, it's even better.
Okay.
And how often do you do this?
It was one of those, you know, things I used to just do for fun, just as a good opening act, and, you know, like the wife or girlfriend will look at them, like, or vice versa, like, you know, what, you know, or even better, go to the girlfriend, congratulations.
And then you basically, you know, say, oh, I thought you were pregnant.
No, you don't even have to say that. That's the best part.
Oh, that's the joke? The joke is that they're pregnant?
No, it could be anything, but it's just the sheer confusion that takes place. But the first thought that you're going to have, if someone went up to your girlfriend or wife and said congratulations, it's going to be, maybe she's pregnant. Isn't that the first thing you're going to think?
I would hope my wife would tell me before you.
That's the scary thing. You're still going to think that.
No.
All right. Your wife's pregnant, by the way.
Well, yeah. Tracy Morgan was by the house, so. What are you gonna do?
All right, moving on.
Yeah. Great. Adam, have you taken your January calendar photo yet?
Was I supposed to?
Oh, we did talk about it on the New Year's show. About making a calendar this year.
Right.
Remember? It's
vaguely familiar.
Oh, that's great.
There's still time.
Yeah, right? There is. That's why I bring it up now, because I knew you wouldn't.
Yeah, no, actually, I have a photo now, come to think of it.
Is it of your kids?
Yeah. Is that not allowed?
Well, I don't know. I'm not putting it on the wall if it's of your kids.
Oh, that's right. You're supposed to put it on the wall.
Yeah. I like your kids, too.
Yeah. All right.
So.
I got a few more days.
I'm going to find that episode and send you a link so you can listen to what we talked about.
Okay, sounds good.
Good, there's your reminder.
All right,
so let's go quickly go over the Eggs of Oku. Don, this is a new game we're playing on the show.
I see the file here, and so I'm going to guess that this game is you give me some of the EXIF information, and I have to guess at what the rest of it is?
That's what we're going to do with one of the listeners' photos. You ever play Sudoku?
No.
But you know what it is?
Yes.
Okay. So you did guess correctly. It's gonna fill in the blank with the missing EXIF info. So last week's our photos last week, Adam took a picture of his son riding his bike outside at night.
Yep.
And it looks like day.
Yes, I saw that.
And Adam, that was a 1/500th shutter speed.
Okay.
That was that's what yours was. So for people who guessed, some people guessed, I think 1/200th, 1/1000th, we got some guesses for. But the fact that you were able to shoot at an F, I think a 5.6 or something like that, at 1/500th at night was pretty impressive.
Well, there you go. I'm glad you checked the information, because I cannot remember.
No, I wrote it down.
Great.
Back of my January calendar photo.
Yeah, which you've already printed.
Oh yeah, I've already got that sorted out. And so then my picture of the cow was 1/60th of a second. So nobody guessed that one.
Okay.
It was rather very very dark. So that was at a max at the ISO 6400 f/4, I believe, and 1/60th for a 200mm lens. So
wow,
non IS. That's why people were guessing.
You're pretty solid there.
Yeah, I'm a golden god.
Hands of a surgeon.
And I dig music.
The human tripod, new shirt.
Right. yeah, That's what you wear to play hockey, right?
It could be awkward.
Yeah.
That could be awkward.
Entering a weird area. Okay. Anyways, no, I used a fence to keep still. So, but let's get on to this week's. We've got Brian Keiko of I think he's from Great Falls. I didn't write it down.
Okay.
Brian knows who he is, though. So we have This is a picture of his backyard, I'm guessing. So he
looks like a yard to me.
Yeah. So he tells us, Don, ISO 400 and an f/5.6 at 1/80th is the shutter speed. So we have to guess the focal length on this one. Now, Adam already guessed online.
Oh, we have to just guess the focal length.
Just the focal length.
Oh, well, then none of the other information really matters.
That's the missing piece.
None of the other information, which?
Really matters.
The f/5.6 does. It
matters a little bit.
Yeah. I guess, we could put that puzzle piece to work.
The 5.6 says we don't want to make it crazy difficult. We want people to engage this one. But the 5.6 is the key factor here. And I'm assuming it's a crop sensor camera. So focal length, Adam, what did you say?
I think I said 20 millimeters.
Okay.
Well, if it's f/5.6, it's probably a zoom lens. And if that's the case, it's probably pretty likely to be a kit lens, like an 18 to 55 or something in that nature. So at what angle it's set to, I'm going to guess 35 millimeter.
That's probably in the range. I was going to guess around 24. Simply because I think we see a pretty wide area.
Depends on how far back he's standing from the fence, and I don't see a whole lot of spatial distortion. And,
I think he cropped it. I think he got cute, and I think he cropped it. That's why I went all the way to the 20.
That would screw things up, too.
Yeah.
We don't know if he did, but that's actually what I was thinking. I think he cropped it, and so that's why I was going lower. But I agree with Don's rationale in that it's probably the kit lens, and... Yeah. Yeah,
I'm on board with that. I picked 24 mils for the same reason you guys all picked relatively wide. We have pretty decent depth of field here,
especially for a 5.6, right?
Yeah, so it's got to be something very very wide. But what we don't have is tons of, like Don was saying, distortion around the edges on the fence and whatnot.
Right.
So it has to be. So it's not wide open at 18.
Right.
So okay. So 20. 24 and 35 is what we're guessing.
We don't know the answer, right?
No. We'll find out. It's a cliffhanger.
Okay. Cliffhanger.
Yeah. Did anybody shoot anything good this week? This is how we speed the show up when it's usually it's what did you shoot? Did you shoot anything good? Let's start with Don, our guest, and be polite for once, Adam.
All right. Sorry.
No, you and I.
I'm going to be polite.
Well, I've had almost no time at all to shoot. My fiance and I were going to be going to a concert yesterday, and funny story about that. We have tickets to a Bon Jovi concert, so we're going downtown Toronto. It's being held at the Air Canada Center, and we get to Union Station. We pull the tickets out to figure out exactly the timing of the show, and we realize that it's for February 8th. Not January 18th. And to this point, neither of us had double checked the month that the concert was. So I was going to play around and get some concert photos and see what I could do. But that never happened. So I'm going to have to wait until next month for that. We had a fun ride on the TTC. And that was the extent of my photography. Except when I got back, there was a bit of snow still falling. And I went out and I snapped one snowflake photograph this week, which I used for my challenge photo.
All right. That's... Huh. Well,
And we rescheduled the recording of this around that concert, too, so I feel like a schmuck.
Yeah, a little tip for you, don't admit to that. Don't tell me later. No, it's okay. It's okay. Adam didn't miss anything of the hockey game, from what I understand.
No, the Canucks are getting shelled, so it's okay.
On a positive note, at least the concert wasn't December the 18th.
Yes, that's true.
Because you had missed it. Now, Bon Jovi... How old were you when Slippery When Wet came out?
I don't know if I was born.
Yeah. So zero. Wow. Yeah. There you go. Bon Jovi. Still rocking it.
Right. Yeah.
Adam, what'd you shoot this week?
Also very thin on the photo taking. I did a few photos, which I posted on Facebook about a week ago, taken last Saturday. That was the last time I really took photos, when we were down in Kitsilano, Kits Beach. There was a sunny day last weekend, so mm-hmm. went down with the kids and hit the park. So I took the new camera and 85mm, and I posted some pictures. So by the time people hear this, I think those photos, if anyone's on our Facebook site, they've seen them already. So yeah, pictures just of my kids playing at the park. But it was a nice day, and I got some just candid shots of them playing.
And you took the new camera?
Took the new camera and the 85mm, which again is kind of my new walk around, because it's awesome and it's portable.
Yes. Yep. I happen to love that combination myself.
So there you go. How about yourself?
We got more snow here, so that means sledding.
Yeah.
Tobogganing. I don't know. What do we call sledding or tobogganing in Ontario, Don?
Well, it depends on what you're using. We usually refer to it based on your mode of transportation. If you're using a GT, then you're going GTing. If you're using a crazy carpet, then you're going sliding.
Sliding. There you go. That's what I'm looking for, sliding.
Alrighty.
I didn't know that's what we called it. I would just call it like tobogganing, I think, probably, no matter what we used, even though we didn't use a toboggan. I could be wrong. Anyways, that's... I'm not sure anybody's writing this down.
Yeah, there'll be a test at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget. What are we talking about? Anyways, so we went more sledding, and so took a lot more pictures of that yesterday and a couple days before that. And a lot of friends came out, brought their kids, and so that's always kind of fun. I don't know if you like taking pictures of that, Adam, if you get much opportunity.
Not a lot of opportunity, but it does seem like it would be good fun for photo taking.
It's great. When you get to use your really long lens, because like there's plenty of open space where we go,
right?
And so that you get a lot of nice pictures. Stand far back, zoom in, you get a lot of nice action pictures, and that's what's, people appreciate them, especially because they're not getting those with their point and shoot.
Great.
Okay. So that was it. Other than, basically was shooting in the snow. I had to, and having to meter off the snow. So I basically set the snow to be +2 on my meter and went from there, and everything else fell into place.
Nice.
Photo challenge. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention, and I don't expect either of you to be able to, although maybe Don can help me out on this one. The shutter release on my 40D sticks a little bit.
Well, how do you mean sticks? What situation would it not fire?
It takes a little bit more pressure to fire than it should.
Oh, so it's just that the button itself, it's not, if the focus isn't locking or that kind of stuff.
Mm.
So when you press it down halfway, does it still do your autofocus and any functions that are associated with it? You might not have it configured for autofocus, but the half button press still works the way it should?
That's a good question. I don't have it configured for that, and so I don't know. I'll have to set that and find out.
All right.
See, maybe, well, Don, you can figure stuff out for me. That's awesome.
Yeah, call me whenever something breaks, and I'll send you on a wild goose chase.
Well, I'll do that next, and see if that's what takes care of the issue, and see if that even works. And if not, I know where to start. But I've been getting around it. I mean, it works okay. It just takes a little too much pressure. And obviously, you can get like a little camera shake if that happens. And right. So I basically just set it off to burst mode and ignore the first picture.
How long has it been doing this? I'm just trying to figure out, maybe it's some sort of environment that you were in, freezing cold, or you got it wet, or maybe some sand got in there, or there was something that is maybe in between where the button is and it's a little contact press on. And if that's the case, then say if there's a few grains of sand in there, mm-hmm. then you'll have to press harder for the contact to be made properly.
It could be it. It's fairly new. It's about a week old, and there's been no sand lately. But who knows? It could have, been in there and then dislodged. Hey, stay tuned, Adam. I'll fill you in.
Yeah. Great. We're all on the edge of our seats.
Well, it's my 40D, and it is fairly old. I got a lot of use out of it, so it's not the end of the world if it's end of life. But I'd like to keep it. This week's photo challenge is gray. Last week we talked about I issued the challenge saying gray, and that's what we're going to go with, Adam.
Yes.
Let's just start with mine, because I know how this is going to go.
Okay.
is that all right?
Sure.
Adam, you don't like mine.
I don't know. My first glance at your first one, so I guess it depends which one. I like second one better.
Yes.
The second one you put in.
Do you?
The entry B I like better than entry A.
Which one do you like better, Don?
You know what? It's a tough go between the two of them. If we're going based on the idea of gray, then maybe your first one fits the bill a little bit better. But if I'm just comparing the two images, I like your second choice as the better of the two.
As do I. It's a better picture. But I took the other one first. Let's just go with that one because it was based on it actually is more gray, I think.
Okay.
So the first one, Adam, your initial reaction was.
Yeah, that was my initial reaction.
Explain.
I don't know. It's just not much to it. Not something that I would probably look at for more than a few seconds and move on.
Okay.
That's it. It just looks like an empty space. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you're going for, that's great. But there's nothing identifiable in this image to me. So again, my interest is not, there's nothing in there that sort of says, ooh, I have to look deeper into that.
Okay, then I guess I've failed.
Okay, what am I supposed to be looking at?
Well, first of all, it's a color photo.
Okay.
So my first instinct when we were doing gray, obviously, was hey, do something in black and white because that really, that's gray, right?
Yeah.
But when I issued the challenge, I was sort of thinking about, what it's like to, what winter feels like and those sort of gray days. And so I wanted to then take a color, look for a color photo I could take that would still be devoid of any color.
Okay.
So this is it.
Okay. Mission accomplished.
Don, what does this photo say to you, Don?
Well, I get what you're saying about having some color in there, but I'm not sure that the color is helping it too much. It's sort of like, at least it's showing up on my monitor as being almost like a tint of a muddy, greenish, brownish kind of blah color that I don't really like. But if it was just black and white, then I would have maybe focused on more of the features on the lower third of the image where you've got some of your landscape filling in some details. I also wanted to ask Alan, why did you choose to have the horizon so low in the frame? What was the thought behind that?
It was more so about the gray sky, as I just wanted to be a hint of the horizon and show the gray sky. Now, my whole reasoning behind this was first of all, those green colors don't show up on my monitor. It comes in pretty gray on my monitor, so.
Perhaps. I'd say I'm halfway in between. I do get it pretty gray, but I do see the green that he's talking about.
Oh, okay.
But you're colorblind too, so.
That's correct. So maybe that's the issue. So it looked very gray to me when I put it up. But to me, this photo was about it was how it makes you feel. You know that feeling of winter? Like, I don't know. How do you feel about winter, Adam?
I like hockey.
But to me, January becomes this sort of the long, that's when winter really sets in because, the excitement of Christmas is over and it's sort of like these short days and short gray days. And oftentimes in Vancouver and, here in Germany as well, you get this sort of weather. And it's just
I think if you're looking to take a picture that gives you a very dismal mood when you're looking at it, then I think you've got it.
Okay, that's what I was going for.
Great success.
All right, well, moving on then.
Moving on.
Let's. Who's up next? Let's go with Dawn's.
Okay.
Now, Dawn, this is a snowflake. Oh, did I spoil the surprise?
Yeah, you ruined the whole darn thing, man.
Okay, what is this, Dawn?
It's a snowflake.
Okay.
And, well, it's funny because when you threw the challenge out for gray, I don't know if you were thinking of me. And pretty much the only pictures I take this time of the year are various shades of gray within the snowflakes. So I was like, I didn't have to do anything different. So here's a snowflake. It's a 12-sided snowflake. It's it's actually two regular snowflakes that are connected by a center column. So it looks like it's got more arms than you'd normally find on your conventional snowflake. But that all really doesn't matter. It's just a pretty cool macro photograph of... I like to say that it embodies winter. The same way, Alan, as you're saying, gray is a very winter feel. Mm-hmm. Well, snowflakes and snow and all that, you know, that's a very winter... it's winter's icon, really. And it's a very Canadian thing as well. And, of course, a lot of them are various shades of light gray.
And this is a very much... I think a much more positive... version of winter.
I think so, anyhow. Yeah. I'm glad you agree.
Yeah, no, it is. It's like, this is very nice. Like, my picture is not, it's not beautiful. It's not, it doesn't make you think, oh man, I really want to be there. Whereas, although I do like where I live, I'm not suggesting otherwise. I searched out a dismal spot.
Okay.
But though this one is, I think this is a little more cheery. The attitude is, you know, besides the you know, awesome visuals that are going on, which we've talked about in past episodes, I forget which ones, but I'm the ones with Dawn on them.
It was one of the very first episodes, I think, within the first dozen or around there on macro photography is the first one where we talk about snowflakes. So
that's right.
Give that a listen.
Give that a listen if you want to find out how this was done. I'm guessing it was photo stacked.
Yep. Focus stacked.
Focus stacked. That's what I meant to say. Focus stacking. So how many photos roughly is this put together?
This one's about 40.
Okay.
It was 39 or so. And this is
sorry. Was go that? Ahead.
No, I was just going to say.
I'm just going to talk every time you try to talk.
Yeah.
All right. I was going to say that this, like when I do this type of photograph, I have to photograph it at every single different focus point across the snowflake. And it often requires around 30 or 40 separate images because I only have a tiny sliver of focus. Mm-hmm. And that's because the snowflake is on an angle to the camera. And that angle allows me to play around with surface reflection so I can get the light glaring off the surface and giving it a little bit of a shimmer. So in order to get that effect, it's a lot of extra work, but it's worth it.
It is. Now, with my photo, focus stacked 40 images as well. No real reason, just because.
Well, that effort was wasted.
Yeah, I might have wasted my time.
40, although, you know, 42. It's funny you mention that, Alan. I have used that technique for some landscape photographs before, especially when we are dealing with the night sky and that kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. We'll be talking about that in a little bit.
Okay. Like it. Adam. Which photo were you using?
It's
the
good.
Yours?
I like it.
A or B?
Did I not get to say that I like Don's photo?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, I like it. It's a good photo, Don.
What do you like about
it? That's the snowflake.
All the things you said. Yeah.
No, I like the middle. I like the centerpiece. Like that's what stands out to me. Like, it looks like just a star right in the middle that, you know, sort of glows brighter than the rest. So my eyes are drawn there, and I like that.
Looks good.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's get to the real good stuff. The stuff Adam.
Yeah. My photo, I will just use the A.
Okay.
Because my intent here was to show that you can take really bad photos with a full frame camera.
Mm-hmm.
The camera doesn't make the photos. So I know I went off last week and I kind of wanted to sort of, you know, say to everybody, you know, the crop sensor cameras are still good because you can probably take a much better photo with a crop sensor camera than I took this week with my full frame.
Right.
But basically what I did was I'm going to make a little bit of an excuse and say my photo taking gray day was a beautiful day. And I, like Al, had planned to take some sort of landscape in Vancouver on a cloudy gray day. It didn't happen for me on the weekend. So I woke up before work. I think this was Thursday morning at about 6 a.m. So pretty dark out. And I took this. I was like, oh, gray morning. And this is just taking out my front window. So I just grabbed the camera, shot through the blinds. So that's what you see. This is through the window to our front parking area, but you can see a gray sky, and that's it. That's what I did this week. So you can call it a phoning it in,
you already did that.
But it was certainly to prove a point.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So there you go.
I think there's something to be salvaged here. There's something happened in this photo that I was actually going to try to aim for. Had I taken a different photo, like I had something else in mind when I was going to take my photo. I was going to try to take something gray with something bright and yellowy in the photo to sort of contrast the gray day versus the nice yellow light.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah, oh, sorry. So I'll delete the rest of the stuff where you said you couldn't be bothered.
Yeah.
And so
it worked out that way.
And what are the stripes going on in the sky?
That's the blinds. I'm shooting through the blinds.
Right, and they are out of focus, and thus it looks like it provides kind of a cool banding across the sky.
Yeah, and I did a few different versions, so I didn't 100% mail it in. I did it with blinds, without blinds, and a couple of different depths of field on the blinds and where my focus was going to be. So, again, I did take 5 minutes.
Right.
So, yeah. But I kind of liked how my focus point on this was that big green kind of leafy kind of bush thing out front,
mm-hmm.
which I just kind of like the detail in those leaves. Like I did kind of a critical focus check on it on my monitor, and I just I love the detail in those leaves. So I don't know how much it comes through on the on this very downsized image that we're going to put up, but yeah, I kind of like the look of those leaves. Aside from everything else in the gray, I like how those leaves look.
So effort wise, you'd say you and Don are tied.
Yeah.
Dead heat.
Yeah.
Dead heat between you two.
No, I'll give it to him. He's the guest. I'll give it to him.
Oh, appreciate that. Very magnanimous.
There we go. I win by default.
Yeah. But you know what I really had in mind? I had a lot of good ideas. None of them materialized in my time, but I really wanted to shoot I asked my wife, do you know anybody who's got a gray cat or a gray dog? I was going to take an animal photo. I've never done it for any photo challenge, and I really wanted to take, and unfortunately, nobody we know has a gray animal. So I was fully prepared to go out to a friend or neighbor's house to take a shot of their gray animal, and could not locate a gray animal to do.
Well, that's a sad story.
Good, no, good intentions. I'm just saying, good intentions.
Okay. I think Don's photo is the nicest. Like, if we're going to frame all three, Don would probably sell his first.
Thanks for that. I think if that were true, then Adam, you might be sitting on yours for a very long while.
Unless you got it painted on velvet.
That's true. Maybe. And
then you could sell it at a garage sale, I'm sure.
Or maybe to someone in our complex. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Prospective owner.
Yeah.
Something to think about.
Going on the MLS website when we sell our place.
But in all honesty, I've always kind of wanted to do this, and my wife won't let me. But I always want to take a picture of the view out of a window, frame that picture, and then put it right next to that window. But do it in every room in the house.
What would possess awesome. You to want to do that?
How awesome would that be at a party?
Yeah. Like
if you don't and tell anybody. Big. Oh, yeah. Huge pictures. Basically, I think, or even cooler would be, now this one I think would be really cool to do, is to take large photos. You have to go outside the house, obviously.
Yeah.
And take pictures of what the view would be like if there was a window there. Like if you could see through the wall, but that take that picture and then put, I've actually done
that. I like that idea much better.
I've done that. Like into other rooms of the house, so it looks like you're looking through like a pass-through window.
Yeah,
and it's pretty cool, except for the bathroom one. That one's sort of weird, but
yeah, a little bit awkward.
No, I recommend. Now someone's going to do that, so I'm going to patent that idea, and then someone's going to sue me.
Yeah.
So, what are you going to do? Okay, are we done?
Yeah.
Show's over. Adam's hit the wall. This week's topic, we have Don on the show for specifically to tell us all about Star Trails.
I guess that's what we're doing today, then.
Did you have something else planned?
No. That's it, I guess.
Did you want to talk about pictures taken out of Adam's front window?
You know what? That is very tempting. But I think we're going to stick with the Star Trail idea for today.
Let's do it. So all what? Right. I got questions. Where do we even start? What is a Star Trail photo?
A Star Trail photograph is a photograph that shows motion blur of a very particular type. If you take into consideration what you can get motion blur in a photograph of, look at like a car at night. If you get a very long exposure of a car driving by, you'll have streaks of light that are running across the frame. And the same is true if you leave the camera open for a very long period of time, pointed at the stars. Because the stars will then be spinning in the night sky. Really, it's the Earth that's spinning, but the stars look like they're spinning to us. And so a Star Trail photograph shows this motion blur of the stars over a period of time. Typically, it's at least 15 minutes. Sometimes you can see them going for many hours, enough to get a good solid trail going on those stars. And there's a couple of fun techniques in order to do this. It's not very difficult, and all you need is a clear night to do it. Have either of you tried it?
No,
it sounds difficult to me.
Yeah.
It's quite easy. There's two ways to do this. Actually, there's an easy way and a hard way. Which way do you want me to describe first?
Easy way.
Yeah, I want you to guess what we want.
All right.
Adam took easy a picture out of his front window. Yeah, give him the difficult one.
Sure.
A lot of legwork.
Easy way. So get your camera set up in a position that you like. And for me, when I'm doing this type of photograph, I want to go with the widest angle lens possible. In fact, most of my Star Trail photographs are done with a fisheye lens, which has a very wide field of view, 180 degrees. But any wide angle lens will work well for you. And it's best to have a night in which the moon is not going to be in the way. If the moon is out, then your camera has to be sort of pointed away from the side of the sky that the moon is out in. And I'll describe why in a minute.
Can we backtrack one? And I'm going to ask a very obvious question, but Adam has no clue.
What you're going to ask?
About the answer. How do you hold the camera still, first of all, for 15 minutes plus?
Well,
that's got to be tiring.
Yeah,
it's very tiring. You know, it's a sport in and of itself. Unless, of course, you have a tripod, which is what you should use. And if the camera is on a tripod, then you are all set.
So, Adam, you'll need a tripod for this, Adam.
Tripod, check.
Or you could just rest it on your windowsill if you want to shoot out your window again.
Perfect.
The best part was I was actually all ears on that. I was like, hey, that sound. Oh, he's burning him.
And I was wondering why your reaction was so delayed.
Yeah.
Skype.
That's good. No.
All right.
Extra good burn.
The easy way to do this is you set your camera up to have a manual exposure. And you dial in a few key settings. You want to have a 30-second shutter speed. Typically, that's the fastest shutter speed that a camera will let you go to while it's still doing its automatic metering. Bring your ISO up to something comfortably high, say 800 or 1600, and set your aperture fairly wide open to say f2.8 or whatever your lens can get you to. And then take the shot and see what you get. And this is sort of a bit of guess and test to figure out what your proper exposure should be, because it's going to be a bit different depending on if you have ambient light around you or where you are in the world. So if the exposure that you create is too bright or too dim, then adjust your ISO typically. Adjust your ISO to compensate. So bring your ISO up or down to increase or decrease the brightness of the shot. And now you've got one frame of your Star Trail. And the next part is the easiest part that you could imagine for doing some, you know, really cool photograph like this. If you have a remote shutter release for your camera, plug it in, lock the button in the down position, and walk away. And then come back an hour later and unlock it, and then you've got your source files to put the image together. if you don't have a and I'll talk about what you do with them afterwards in a second, but if you don't have a remote shutter release, mm-hmm. and I've done this before.
So we're taking multiple 30-second
You're taking
images?
Multiple 30-second exposures. So okay. If you let it run for an hour, then you'll have 120 separate 30-second exposures.
Okay.
And so what I've done in some occasions where I've forgotten or my remote shutter has broken, I've actually found a small pebble and I've taped it over my shutter button. And if you get it good and seated on there, the first shot, of course, when you're fiddling with everything is going to be blurry. But after you walk away, the second shot on is going to be nice and solid and clear. Mm-hmm. So some of my Star Trail photographs have been made with a pebble taped over my shutter button.
So essentially what
if you don't have the remote shutter, you don't need one.
That's just going to, I mean, if you didn't have it on a 30th of a second, if you had it on a 30 seconds, if you had it on a 60th of a second, it would just sit and fire away, right?
Yeah, it would. If you were on 1/60th of a second, then it would just take however many photos your camera can take per second and fill up your memory card pretty quickly.
However, but, on 30 seconds, you're going
to
get...
It's going to take 30 seconds to take one frame, and as soon as that photograph stops recording, then it's going to automatically start up as fast as it can and start recording the next one.
Nice.
And that's the key there, is because you're dealing with a 30-second exposure, you can just sort of lock the shutter button down by any means you've got, and then walk away and set your watch.
Okay, now are you shooting RAW images?
I shoot RAW, but I mean, it doesn't matter if you're shooting RAW or JPEG. It will work exactly the same. You get a little bit more flexibility with the RAW file in case you've got a lot of light pollution around you to help recover from that.
Okay. But if you are shooting JPEG, do you turn off the high ISO, whatever the nomenclature is, I don't know what it's called, the high ISO...
Well, the camera will have two types of noise reduction built in.
There you go.
You'll have high ISO noise reduction, and you'll have long exposure noise reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll want to turn both of those off, but primarily you want to turn the long exposure noise reduction off.
Okay.
Do you know how that works, Alan?
No. Let's just say no.
Okay.
Adam explained it to me one time, but I wasn't listening.
Adam, you want to take a stab at it?
No idea.
Okay. So what happens is if you get a 30-second exposure and you have a long ISO or a long exposure noise reduction turned on, then your camera will take 1 minute to take a 30-second exposure.
Right.
Because what it's going to do is it's going to take the photograph, and then it's going to take a second frame with the shutter closed that's going to be completely black. And this is going to create a noise map of all the – like anything that is not black is going to be noise on the sensor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to use that as a map to remove noise from the photograph that it had taken previously. So if you've got like a timer or you put your camera on bulb mode to take a 5-minute exposure and you have this turned on, you'll have to wait 10 minutes in order for your camera to be properly reset. So that means that if you were trying to do this particular Star Trail setup with that feature turned on, you'd only get half the images that you'd need.
I see. That's why I brought it up.
Thank you, Alan.
All right.
I don't want to miss any points here. So at the end of that, you'll end up with, well, depending on how long you leave it, over 100 separate photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do with them?
That's why we're here. This is the part that baffles me.
So this is actually a pretty easy part. I use Lightroom and Photoshop, but you can get away just using Photoshop with this. It's pretty easy. You'd have to load up Bridge, and in Bridge, you'll have an option in one of the tools menu. You can go into, I don't remember if it's Photoshop or and then Tools or Tools and Photoshop, but you'll have an option to select multiple images and load them in as separate layers within the same workspace in Photoshop. Okay. Lightroom has the same option. You just select a bunch of images. You can choose edit in Photoshop as layers. So you can look up that process if you need to. But the next step is incredibly simple. If you're using the newest version of Photoshop, CS6, all you have to do is select all of the separate layers and then change the blending mode to lighten, and you're mm-hmm. done.
Really? Okay.
And so what happens then is, if people aren't familiar with what blending modes are, it's a way for one layer to interact with the layers underneath it. And there's a bunch of different ones in there. There's like 20 or 30 different ways you can blend layers together in some sort of automatic algorithm. But the lighten blending mode will take one frame and compare it to the one layer and compare it to the layer underneath it. And it will say whatever pixels are lighter, display them.
Okay.
Now, if your scene is in general not changing very much, say the cityscape, you know, the lights are not going to be changing too much, but the stars are going to be moving. So as they move to a new position, that new position comes through and the old position still stays because now it's lighter in a new position. And as that continues to go around its little spiral, you'll see that form instantly. Depending on how many photos you've got. And it all depends on what you're looking for. You want a shorter trail, just delete some of your images. And then you can play around with it that way.
This does sound simple.
It's very simple.
No, I thought you were lying.
No, it's incredibly simple. The only trick is, if you're using an older version of Photoshop, say CS5, yes. You can't select all of the layers at once and change their blending mode all at once. You've got to do it layer by layer. So you might waste 10 minutes of your life just clicking buttons to get the effect, but you'd see it grow progressively by doing it that way.
I see.
Now, that is how you, in essence, take a star trail photograph. There's a few tips to keep in mind. You might want to figure out beforehand where the North Star is located, because all the stars in the night sky will be spinning around the North Star, and if you can keep that in the frame somehow, then it'll give an anchor point in the sky, and it looks pretty cool.
Okay.
So, what I would usually do is I can just hold the shutter button down on the camera for maybe 5 minutes or so. It's going to give me a like blurry, jittery picture, but it'll give me enough of a spin in the stars to give me an idea where the North Star is and if I need to move my camera up, down, left, or right to figure out where that is and if I can add it into the frame. It's not always a necessity, but if you can, it's always a nice thing to have.
Gotcha. I'm looking at some of your photos right now. And yeah. I'm now noticing that. I mean, just prior to you mentioning it, it just looked really cool. But now I see it has purpose to it.
Exactly.
Adam, let's have a look at the first one.
I'm looking at the green one, the Eye of the Solar Storm, and that one just is mesmerizing me. So I've just been staring at that one for the last 10 minutes.
Well, okay, so that one is a particular... it's a different approach to this whole Star Trail idea. So... this is only 7 frames combined over a total of 2 hours. So normally over 2 hours with the same setup that I would have described, I would have 240 separate frames combined in order to give the star trail. Mm-hmm. But it was way overpowering. This is a photograph that shows the northern lights in the Yukon and the stars spinning in the sky and all of that. But if I had the full complete star trail in this frame, it would just obliterate the northern lights and it would be kind of grungy and not that pleasing. So I opted to just take 7 frames and space them out almost like they're accelerating. I based it on a Fibonacci sequence just so that they start closer together and they get farther and farther apart. And that turned out fantastic. You can still see the stars spinning. You can still see the North Star. And you've got the Northern Lights coming in, and they accent each other very nicely. So you can take that concept of combining multiple frames together and play around with it in different ways. You don't have to have them all.
But you did shoot them all.
I shot them all, yeah. So then I've got the flexibility to choose which ones I want to use afterwards.
Right.
If you want to play around and not have solid star trails, but you want to have a dotted line, just delete every second one or only keep in every third one, and you'll see dotted lines show up instead of solid lines. And so you can play around with that and have a lot of fun in post-processing. It's pretty easy.
Great.
But I was going to mention as well, there's different techniques. This was the easy way to do it, but there's the traditional way to photograph star trails, and it helps understand how people used to do it versus how we do it now to get a better idea of what exactly is going on and what things to consider that could ruin the photograph.
Okay.
So the traditional way would be, instead of doing it in 30-second chunks, you would do it all at once. So you would have the camera open collecting light for a half hour or an hour or however long you want it to be. But to do it that way, you have to figure out what your exposure should be. And sometimes it's just not possible to get the proper exposure. A lot of my Star Trail photographs will have a certain amount of light pollution, whether it's caused by a nearby city or by the Northern Lights even. Having that light pollution in the frame means that if I leave the camera shutter open for an hour, then all I will get is just a blast of white overexposed nonsense.
Okay. In that area or the whole image?
Well, it will spill out of that area and spill across the image from there, but it will ruin the shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also the reason why you don't want to have the moon in the frame, because it'll do the same thing. And that means that the traditional way of doing star trails, you would have to be in the middle of nowhere in order to get some good results. And you'd have to have no moon in the sky and just hope for the best. Hope that you've got your exposure right, and you only find out after the exposure is done on the camera.
Right.
And if this was in film, then you'd only find out when you get the film developed, so you wouldn't even get a chance to retry that night.
So like if Adam opened his fridge right in the middle, that would probably spill all over his camera, the light.
If he's doing it, right from his kitchen. Mm-hmm. And so you'd have some issue there, because it would hit the glass and reflect the light back and ruin the shot.
Good. Write that down, Adam.
I'm already there.
Okay.
I'm actually in my kitchen having a sandwich right now.
Yeah, one of your guests is making it for you. But anyways.
Good callback.
That's how we do it.
When I play around with this technique, you can do it in one frame, and it's somewhat elitist to do it with a digital camera when there's better ways to do it. But I've tried it, and it does work. What you would do is you would take that 30-second frame that you've got the exposure perfect on, mm-hmm. and you can then calculate what your exposure should be if you extrapolate that to be a 30-minute exposure. I would just do the math in my head. You could say, let's say your ISO is at 800 then for 30 seconds. Then it would have to be at 400 for a minute. It would have to be at 200 for 2 minutes and 100 for 4 minutes. So then I can bring that lower. What other settings can I adjust? Can I bring my aperture smaller in order to get the exposure to be longer and have the same amount of light coming in? So you can just play around with those numbers in your head or write them down, or there's exposure calculators out there to figure out, if you know what a good exposure is, how to adjust the time on that.
Now, in theory, you can still count clicks even though it's that long of a distance.
You can. Yeah, this is the counting clicks, but I find that I'd lose track after a little while, especially when I'm more than one setting, so I sort of make a little mental note, or jot it down on paper as I'm doing it, just to figure it out, like I'm long
for. Okay, I owe 108 clicks.
Exactly.
Now, what's the shortest amount of time that you can get a reasonably well-done star trail photo?
This depends on your focal length. Okay. And wider the angle that you're shooting, the longer the exposure should be overall. And that's because if you're using a telephoto lens, the stars are going to move across the frame much quicker than they would move across the frame on a wide angle, because they've got further to travel. Now, if you're using a telephoto lens, it might be necessary in order to get a proper composition and all of that, but you'll have fewer stars in your field. So it might not be as dynamic as you might expect.
Okay.
So depending on how wide angle you go. Like with the fisheye lenses, I'll typically shoot between 45 minutes and an hour. If I'm using, say, a kit lens at 18 millimeters, maybe a half hour is good enough.
Okay.
But there's no problem if the camera's just going and you can let it run for an extra 15 minutes. You can choose afterwards not to use the extra 15 minutes of footage. But it's hard to add on to the trail afterwards. So
When you say shoot 15 minutes of footage, are we talking about video now?
Well, no. Here's the thing, is I can use the Star Trail images as frames for a time-lapse video as well.
Oh, okay. So I went back to the... doing it in one image.
Oh, okay. No, in that case,
that's what's confusing to me. So if you're going to shoot off a one shot star trail with let's say a 24 mil lens.
Yep.
What's the minimum you're going to be thinking about for exposure time?
I'd probably say the minimum being about 15 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, in that case, too, you're going to start dealing with the long exposure noise reduction. And if that's turned on or off, it might be valuable if you're doing it as just one frame to turn that on. You'll be waiting twice as long as your exposure, but it might be valuable to help clean up some of the noise that comes into the frame. I do notice that even if you're shooting RAW and you run it through a noise reduction in Lightroom or any other program that you're using, there's a certain... It's almost like a bright spot noise that's unlike anything that the noise reduction filters typically can clear out. I get it as good as I can in Lightroom, and then I bring it in Photoshop and run a dust and scratches filter through it, and that noise reduction will clean it up nicely. But it gets kind of painful to clean up the noise on the really long exposure stuff if you're shooting digital. Right. That's actually an advantage of film. If you're doing star trails on film and you're doing it all in one shot, there's no noise based on, whatever noise the ISO of the film has generally. But that's one of the things that I'm going to be experimenting with this year is taking my large format camera and trying to do some star trails with that and to see if I can get anything fun on 4x5.
Adam also has a film camera, so he'll probably do the same.
Yeah. I have a question for Don. Maybe something that's just going in a slightly different direction because you guys are boring me right now.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's a pic. One of Don's Star Trail photos, the one with the big coin. There's a guy leaning there.
That's me.
How did you make that happen? With you didn't just stand there for an hour, I'm guessing.
No, so this is another trick. If you can get to your location before the astronomical twilight, where everything is completely dark, I got to this particular location. This one was photographed in Sudbury, my hometown, and I got there at just at dusk, so I had a little bit of a glow on the horizon, and I played around with some extra shots to add into that same stack. That we were playing around with in Photoshop with the light and blending mode. And I ran into one of the frames and leaned against the post of the big nickel. And I just stood still for 30 seconds. And I had to do that a couple of times, making sure that I was still and looking in the right place and playing around with composition and all that. But I took one of those frames and I added that back in the Photoshop sequence. And not only did it add me into the frame, but it also gave a nice glow on the horizon that adds a bit more depth to the scene as well.
Nice.
Very cool.
So what time of day would you typically take a star photo?
After all of the daylight has completely gone away, so that when the night is as dark as it will be, there's a fun little app that I use on my phone. I think you can get a version for the PC as well, called the Photographer's Ephemeris. And it will tell you within there the times of for twilight, when the sun sets, and also the time, various times in there, but also when it's as dark as it's going to be. And it'll also tell you when the moon is out and where it is in the sky, too. So it's very helpful to plan shots like this just to figure out, where all your variables are going to lie, what the best night is going to be to attempt it.
Okay, so that sounds extremely handy. Does that take into account your position on the Earth?
Yep.
Okay, so tell us about why is that important? Why is latitude? Why does latitude matter?
Well, because the sun will set at different times based on where you are. The further north you go, the times for sunset and sunrise are always going to be changing. When I was up in the Yukon, at least at the time that I was there, it was pretty much split 12 hours daylight, 12 hours night. But the sun would sort of skim the horizon at a much shallower at an angle, I guess. So while the sun might set at 9 o'clock, it wouldn't get completely dark out until midnight.
Right.
And so that's an important number to keep in mind. Whereas here, if the sun were to set at 8 o'clock, then it would be dark by 9:30, and then you're good to go out and try and attempt a photograph like this.
And so, do the star trails take on a different sort of arc depending on where you are on the Earth?
They can, yeah. So it all depends. It doesn't matter where you are on the Earth. It just matters where the North Star is in relation to you. Mm-hmm. And so if you're if you're near the equator, for example, and you're not looking at the North Star, you might actually see two, and in this case too, like if I were to point the camera in the opposite direction, you would see almost like two fields of stars spinning opposite each other, like they're pushing away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of a fun thing you can experiment with too. There's all sorts of different compositions, and it's hard to figure out exactly what you're going to get until you finish processing it, because you don't know exactly where the stars are going to fall. But if you notice in some of my photographs that you can get almost a sense of direction, to which direction the stars are spinning.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not natural, because the stars are not going to vary in their brightness over time. They're always going to be the exact same brightness, so you wouldn't normally be able to tell direction. But I figured out this little trick, and I don't know if anybody else has done this before, because I kind of figured it out on my own. And it's somewhat painful and time-consuming to do, but it's just a quick little editing trick. When I'm playing around with these shots, I'll edit them all in Lightroom, and then I copy and paste those settings across to all the images, and I send them to Photoshop. That's sort of my workflow. But what I can do then is I can take the final image in the sequence and go back one image and take whatever I set the exposure value to and dial it down by negative 0.02. And then go to the one earlier to that and dial it down by an additional 0.02.
Okay.
And I keep going down and down and down and down until I get to the end of the sequence. And when I bring them into Photoshop, and unfortunately there's no automated way to do that, you just got to click them by hand. But when you bring them in, that's an automated process, and then you just use the blend, the light and blending mode, and you'll get the star trail fade in.
Like a second curtain flash.
Sort of, yeah. And so there's two other images that I put in here as well. I just didn't name them. It's just image 1564 and 1564 progressive.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is every single frame from a longer exposure processed somewhat grungily and not using that progressive method that I just discussed. And then there's also a progressive version, which has a shorter trail, and it's using a sort of a fading technique in order to make it look a little bit more pleasing. So there's so many different ways you can process the images once you've got them. And the cool thing is, if you're not really proficient in Photoshop and all of that, you can just do the basic thing and be happy with the results. And if you get better at this type of stuff down the road, say, you know, 2 years later, you want to go back to your star trails, you can process them in completely different ways and get a lot more out of them.
I'm going to go with the simple method this first time out. Adam, you?
Yes, simple.
No, I like it. I was hesitant to say that I was going to take a star trail photo, because it just seems like an awful lot of commitment.
But oh, it's so easy.
It doesn't. Yeah, I'm gonna shoot mine from my balcony, likely though.
Yeah, and you know what? If you're looking to experiment with this technique for the first time, do it from home. And I did burn Adam earlier by saying do it from your window, but do it from your window. If you've got a clear view of the stars from your window, from your balcony, from your back porch, wherever it happens to be, it's a safe place, because you will have to leave your camera sitting out in the night, or at least pointed towards the night for a lengthy period of time. And some of these shots have been taken in the wilderness, and there are wild animals around, and you've got to be aware of your surroundings and don't do anything stupid. But if you can do it from home just to get experience with the technique, then by all means do it and learn the process. It's not hard. You just have to, you know, load them into Photoshop and change the blending mode, and voila, you're done.
And one last question for our listeners in Australia and the Southern Hemisphere. Instead of the North Star, what are they looking for?
Well, the Earth will spin on its polar axis.
Mm-hmm.
And to that end, maybe they have a South Star. I don't know. I've never been to Australia. I hear their toilets spin the opposite way, so things might be backwards.
Yeah, but they're going to have. I don't know. I've been to Australia before, but this is, you know, before tonight. So I'd never really thought about, you know, what's is it the Southern Cross? I don't know what the anchor point's going to be. So to anybody listening in Australia, let us know on the Facebook or what have you what the anchor point is. I suppose I could Google it, but There we are.
There we go.
Yeah. Let's find
the audience
out.
Do.
Yeah. So I just want to also give out the... We are thinking of you guys down in the South. It's not all Northern Hemisphere centric, okay?
How many listeners do you have in Australia?
Some.
Okay.
I don't know.
More than none.
11.
I have no clue. We do get a number of emails from there, so at least a few.
Oh, cool.
So if they're not listeners, I don't know why they're emailing. It's kind of weird, but we do get correspondence from Australia.
All right.
Okay, that's it. So, Adam, do you think you could handle that?
Is this for a photo challenge for next week?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it's going to happen. I admit, I had a question mark next to it because I was going to have a backup plan because I was like, you know what? I have a kid. There's no way. Like, what am I going to stay up all night? I'm going to, you know, it's not going to happen. But now that Don has made it simple to do, I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Assuming.
Right. I make no guarantees.
Yeah, shocker. assuming we have a clear night, though.
Yes.
Because
a cloud trail photo, not as interesting.
Well, okay, so then how about you do a backup? If you don't have a clear night, then do a light trail photograph from cars.
Are we going to let Don boss us around?
It's kind of not the same thing. I think we've kind of done that, haven't we?
Leaving
you hanging out. What else you got, Don?
I don't know. I was really hoping for star trails.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna make an effort by Wednesday when you get an email saying, "Yeah, this isn't happening."
Yeah.
You know, I'll post something on Facebook with my picture of a car or my blur.
We'll do a long exposure. Definitely. I want to do something to do with the stacking. I'm gonna mess around with the. With the stacking the images, regardless. If we don't get a clear night, I will do something else involving that.
Okay.
But my main goal is to do the star trail.
I have an old version of Photoshop, so I'm gonna do some research in terms of how I do this.
Oh, it's super easy to do. You'll have to click on each image and change the blending mode individually. Mm-hmm. So if you've got like 100 images to do it, you just have to click 100 times.
Okay.
It's just as easy. It just takes a little while longer.
Pretend it's NHL scores you're clicking on.
Okay. All right.
You're in.
I'm going to make a legitimate effort to try to do this.
Okay. As am I. Awesome. I'm looking forward to this now. That's it.
That's it.
Before we go, Don, where can people find your stuff?
Well, you can find a lot of the images that we were talking about on this show, as far as the star trails and everything else, as far as snowflakes and that, on my website at doncom.ca. That's donkom.ca. But I'm most active right now on Google+. So look me up there.
Oh, you're the one.
That's me.
Okay.
The one.
Yeah. Just joking. That was a stab at Google+.
Actually, it's a very thriving community there. Mm-hmm. In fact, just recently they opened up the communities feature. So I started a macro photography community that has it's nearing 9,000 members now, and it's pretty active. There's a lot of interactivity in the photography community on Google+. So I get a lot of feedback and a lot of interaction with people there. So check me out there.
I will do. Adam.
People hate us on Google+.
Yeah, I don't know. That's not just... people hate us everywhere. I don't want to make it Google+. I'm going to go ahead and assume that Don has been much more active in pursuing it than I have been.
I post every day, so...
Yeah, and definitely more active than Adam, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Once Google+ figures out how to just post for us, then boom. Awesome. Okay, Adam.
Yes, yes.
Where can people find, I guess on Facebook now.
Yeah, Facebook, and occasionally when my wife posts, I think she is writing a few posts to come out this week, so shortschronicles.com. But whenever I have some pictures that I feel are worthy of posting, I've been putting them up on Facebook.
Right.
On the Two Hoser site of Facebook, of course. So you should, anybody who hasn't liked us on Facebook, they should do so.
Yes, I agree. I'm starting to really like Facebook.
Me too.
Yeah. For a long time, I was really critical. I was really critical of it without really ever having used it. So that's the good kind of criticism. Really well informed. Great. So, and my stuff, as usual, on alanetridge.com, or, as Adam said, go to twohosers.com, where you can find our Facebook, our Twitter, Flickr, and all that stuff. So that's where you can find us. That's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.